Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Borders are not racist. Speech is not violence. America is good. Terrorists are bad. Men can never become women. Police are not criminals, and criminals are not victims. Eighth, everybody should believe. Thank you.
I think that was supposed to be faith, by the way.
Thank you very much. Everybody should believe in the American dream. It's real, it's there, and it's right before you. We're coming back to the American dream.
So that was part of the president's address last night at Alabama, which I guess was a non-mandatory attendance event, I think is how it wound up being in the end, that you did not have to attend, but, you know, I'm sure widely attended. I have not watched the whole speech yet. It takes me like 2-3 hours to write Transgressors. So on a Thursday night, I don't always get to everything. I haven't gotten to the county commission meeting yet. I will get to it eventually, probably for Monday. You know, that'll be for Monday. But I may make myself listen to the Trump speech last night because it looks like it was at least somewhat interesting. I will say this. President Trump's executive orders, actions, and announcements yesterday were also pretty interesting. One of the ones that he put out yesterday kind of quietly was that he wants to defund NPR and PBS. Effective immediately. And when I say wants to, I mean he did it. Like, it's done. I would expect to be a court challenge. But, yeah, that just kind of slipped in under the radar with the news about Mike Waltz leaving the administration. Well, leaving his post as National Security Advisor and going over to be the ambassador to the UN, which is a demotion and is also not a demotion. I mean, it's a side, but it, I mean, it's a demotion, okay? And you would figure it's basically a punishment for the Signal chat debacle. Time will tell whether Pete Hegseth pays the price for his participation in that, as well as having the private line installed to his office that doesn't go through the Pentagon firewalls, and had his brother and his sister on a separate second Signal chat telling them the same information. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't know. But, an executive order entitled Ending Taxpayer Subsidization, I guess that's the right word, of biased media. That's what it said. He says, purpose, National Public Radio and the Public Broadcasting Service receive taxpayer funds through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CPB. Unlike in 1967 when the CPB was established, today the media landscape is filled with abundant, diverse, and innovative news options. Government funding of news media in this environment is not only outdated and unnecessary, but corrosive to the appearance of journalistic independence. I don't know. The BBC is government-funded, government-sponsored. I mean, it's the British Broadcasting Corporation, and yet I think the BBC does outstanding work. I thought that long before I lived in England for a little while and since. And, you know, in America we have this idea like government and media cannot partner and get along. Well, I'm not sure it can't be done. It's definitely hostile to our tradition, but I don't know that it can't be done. It is not done right now. I mean, that's the problem. I don't know that it can't be done. Anyway, he goes on to write, or somebody wrote, in the executive order, at the very least, Americans have the right to expect that if their tax dollars fund public broadcasting at all, they fund only fair, accurate, unbiased, and nonpartisan news coverage. Agreed. No media outlet has a constitutional right to taxpayer subsidies, and the government is entitled to determine which categories of activities to subsidize. Agreed. I actually kind of play a little bit in my head with the idea that, you know, because local journalism is very important, right? I mean, okay, local journalism is very important. And yet, local journalism is suffering right now, largely, for a variety of reasons. And the question kind of in my mind is there anything the federal government could do in this regard? You know, and there's been kind of proposals before about subsidizing local media. It's a very fraught enterprise, right? Because if media is supposed to check the government and the government's funding it, then you have a problem, right? You have a basic conflict of interest. Will the media continue to be the good check on government or won't it? And will the government punish the media if it doesn't do what it wants? It's complicated. How do you remedy the problem of needing local media and yet having a dwindling of local media? I don't have a good answer for that, but toying with funding is one of the ideas. Back to the executive order. The CPB fails to abide by these principles to the extent that it subsidizes NPR and PBS, which viewpoints NPR and PBS promote does not matter, he writes. What does matter is that neither entity presents a fair, accurate, or unbiased portrayal of current events to taxpaying citizens. That's true. Unfortunate, but true. Again, I say this if you haven't heard me talk about this before. As a fan of NPR and PBS, more so NPR than PBS, but the news product on PBS is also definitely not down the middle. I therefore instruct the CPB Board of Directors and all executive departments and agencies to cease federal funding for NPR and PBS. As I say, I expect this is probably going to go to court, I would assume. I don't know what this means in the long term. Probably what it means is that both NPR and PBS are better in the long run, I would think. So we'll see. But interesting news buried amongst all of the other things that he did, you know, yesterday, including, as I said, you know, he established the Religious Liberty Commission. Did you hear about that one? That's a fascinating one. To basically look over all of the federal laws and try to figure out, are we doing anything that's adversely affecting religious liberty in the United States? Are we infringing on the First Amendment rights of pastors, religious leaders, houses of worship, faith-based institutions, and religious speakers? Are we attacking American houses of worship? Are we debanking or causing religious entities to be debanked because of, for example, DEI or ESG? Or, you know, like, it's interesting. And, by the way, the people who are put on the commission, a lot of pastors, a lot of nationally famous pastors, but people like Cardinal Tim Dolan, Franklin Graham, Ben Carson, Dan Patrick, the Lieutenant Governor of Texas, President of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, Ryan Anderson, lawyers, talk show hosts, Carrie Prejean, a former beauty queen. I mean, like, there's a whole interesting variety of people on this. So we'll see what they produce. You know, we'll wait and see. Coming up next, in relation to another presidential executive order, celebrating America's heroes, why would that get him canceled? I'll tell you in the Transgressors Memorial Service. Meanwhile, John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. I can't wait. All right. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. There are no accidents or delays to let you know about. Things are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Pensacola Beach is a wonderful place to vacation and celebrate with your family. If you thought about having a family celebration or a memorable beach wedding, Casa de Luna still has good dates available this year. Casa de Luna is spacious, with room for large families. It has 9 bedrooms and 8 bathrooms. Casa de Luna is a large private home with a refreshing pool and water views. And the pool can be heated. Casa de Luna is unique in that the main living area is directly on the ground level. It's very convenient. Bedrooms are both on the ground level and upstairs. One bathroom is handicap friendly, and another as a genuine jacuzzi. There's a large gaming porch with a pool table, hockey, ping pong, and Xbox One. Bicycles are provided. Bring your family to Casa de Luna on Pensacola Beach.
For information, call Casa de Luna at 850-433-4855. That's 850-433-4855.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
Did you know you can get your prescriptions for less at your local pharmacy? You can with GoodRx. It's the free app that can save you money on your medications. Just search for your prescription, choose the pharmacy and the price that works best for you, and then show your GoodRx coupon to your pharmacist at the drop-off counter. GoodRx works at over 70,000 pharmacies, including Walmart, Rite Aid, and Walgreens, and it works whether you have insurance or not. It's easy to save. Next time you drop off your prescription, check GoodRx. To start saving today, go to GoodRx.com. GoodRx is not insurance.
Join Acupuncture and Wellness of Pensacola today at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Dr. Rebecca Gibbons will be here to answer your questions about the many benefits of acupuncture. If you suffer from chronic back pain, neuropathy, or joint pain, or even stress and anxiety, this is a show you will not want to miss. Today at 9, with Acupuncture and Wellness of Pensacola on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
News Radio Pensacola has a team of experienced and award-winning journalists dedicated to bringing you the most accurate and up-to-date news coverage. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the president who was elected after Joe Biden, may we never say his name. In a little reported move, the guy who wants to plant flagpoles outside the White House issued an executive order resurrecting a project from late in his first term that would create a National Garden of American Heroes in celebration of the 250th birthday of the United States. He is reallocating slashed funding from the National Endowment for the Humanities into a $33 million commission for 250 sculptures of significant citizens to be displayed as an as-yet-undecided location in honor of American greatness. There's just so much wrong here that it's almost hard to know where to begin. Obviously, no one should be celebrating this country that was built on injustice, racism, sexism, oppression, and religious bigotry. But putting that aside, the premise of the so-called great man theory of history this president believes in is also mistaken. For every hero we honor, there were countless ordinary people who surrounded that person, enabled that person, and toiled in obscurity so that person could have their achievement. We simply reject the premise that one person is greater than another. All people are equally great. Or, to paraphrase the beloved prophet of modern mediocrity, Garrison Keillor, the United States is a place where all citizens are strong, good-looking, and above average. Surely you understand that we can't promote our faith in the proletariat by commissioning $200,000 statues of specific proles. But beyond this, the list itself is a bizarre hodgepodge, including gunmaker Samuel Colt, colonizer Christopher Columbus, Chief Sitting Bull, a man who actually slaughtered Americans, although, of course, we agree they deserved it, Kobe Bryant, but not Michael Jordan, warmongers George Patton and Norman Schwarzkopf, human rights opponent Antonin Scalia, but also Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and even at least one Canadian, Alex Trebek. Do Whitney Houston, Jesse Owens, Annie Oakley, and Edward R. Murrow really all belong in the same group together? It's just weird. So no, we do not need yet another wasteful public expenditure to teach Americans about the triumphs of particular Americans. It will only perpetuate the false narrative of American exceptionalism. Let's instead call for a return of funding to the actual canceled project of collecting first-person accounts of Native Americans who attended U.S. government-run boarding schools. Certainly a much more noble use of public funds than this silly exercise in jingoistic vanity. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, the Republican-dominated Florida legislature, because of their hostile, mean, and unkind attack upon vegans and vegetarians this week, in passing an agriculture bill that prohibits food products from being labeled as milk, poultry, eggs, or meat, unless they actually contain milk, poultry, eggs, or meat. Yes, Senate Bill 700 actually seeks to prohibit beef alternatives from being called beef, chicken alternatives from being called chicken, egg substitutes from being called eggs, and specifically attacks the very common practice of calling nut-derived liquid drinks as milk.
So would it still be okay for the product to say this is oat milk?
I think what we're looking for more is the truth in labeling. So almond beverage, oat beverage, something like that.
That's right. Despite years of successfully encroaching on the grocery store shelf placement of products actually containing chicken and cattle products, and confusing citizens into wondering whether almond milk might not actually need to come in whole, 2%, and skim varieties, this bill now forces a complete unraveling of everything the para-food manufacturers have been striving for. But to be clear, the real problem we have with this bill is not that it forces the makers of almond milk to seek some substitute terminology such as almond beverage, almond drink, liquid almonds, or drinkable almonds, or even almond juice, which at least one Republican, State Representative Alex Andrade, maligned as the patently unfunny object of juvenile satire.
Members, there are few truths that we hold to be self-evident. Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Almond and cashew milk is more accurately described as nut juice. And President's library should be located here in the state of Florida.
Really, sir? Nut jokes? Have you no decency? No. The labels are not our real objection to this bill. The basic problem here is the effort to draw hard and fast boundaries between discrete categories of food, the kind of boundaries against which we stand wholeheartedly. Who does the Florida legislature think it is to tell the poor little almond that it can't identify as a cow product? If cashew drippings want to identify as cashew milk, Who are they to stand in the way? Just because some agricultural inspector guessed that this liquid was pecan-based at its birth doesn't mean he can't be mistaken. If the juvenile pecan emissions identified as pecan milk, that's their prerogative. Why can't egg substitutes identify as real eggs? Why can't seasoned bean curd identify as beef? And why can't processed wheat and peas transition into being real chicken? Instead of trapping these aspirational foods into the categories guessed upon them at their birth, we should be providing meat-affirming care so that these yummy vegan alternatives can be referred to by their preferred adjectives. But no, the same legislature that consistently tries to oppress people who are gender fluid shows themselves to be just as hurtful toward nut fluids, striving to prevent them from enjoying even the smallest spurt of recognition. No, let Florida continue to be the land flowing with imitation milk and honey, I say, and protect breakfast eaters in the Sunshine State from having to say they put nut juice on their Fruity Pebbles. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, a quiet, trophy-free moment of appreciation for the groundbreaking work done recently in the Canadian province of Quebec, or as the locals say it, Quebec, by Superior Court Judge Andres Guérin, who finally handed a group of non-traditional families equal justice before the law. The question at hand was whether a throuple, a group of three lovers, or a quadruple, a group of four lovers, or really any sized uple you might imagine, could have legally recognized filial ties and parental rights to children who aren't biologically related to them. And the court answered with a resounding, "May we!" In this particular case, three families, a man with two women and four children, two lesbians and a male sperm donor, and a couple with the wife's best friend who was their surrogate, all wanted to put their three names on the birth certificate of a child, which currently only has space for two names. Well, they sued, and Gaia-luya, they won. As the judge wrote, quote, "Having a maximum of two filiation links sends the message to multi-parent families and society in general that only families deemed normal with a maximum of two parents represent family structures that are valid and worthy of legal recognition. This message reinforces and perpetuates the disadvantages experienced by those who are part of a non-traditional family," end quote. In other words, even though polygamy is still technically illegal in Canada, it would be wrong to deny the children and the adults of polyparental families their equal rights. Well, all I can say is if you've ever wondered what the plus in LGBT plus was for, now you know. What could be more plus than having bonus parents? After all, don't we always say it takes a village? And now we can more accurately say it takes an autonomous collective of an indeterminate number of non-permanent, consensually non-monogamous, semi-sexually connected parental units. Or an anarcho-syndicalist commune, to quote one British expert on post-feudalistic political revolutions. And isn't this such a wonderful counterstrike against the restrictive, oppressive, and unimaginative concept of the two-parent nuclear family that artificially restricts the love given to and offered by a child? Besides, why should we be so limited in what we think of as nuclear? Why not have a nucleus that's more like real-life nuclei? Hydrogen is one proton and an electron, sort of a single-parent, single-kid scenario. Helium, two protons, two neutrons, and two electrons. Is that not also natural? And why not a beryllium family with four protons, five neutrons, and four electrons? Nature certainly doesn't even seem to validate what we call the nuclear family. And why must one size nucleus fit all? Can there not be many atoms of many dimensions and sizes, or molecules, or even synthetic compounds in the periodic table of family structures? And just think of the practical benefits. Whenever there's a question about permission to go to the movies or attend a sleepover, when one of the dads isn't sure, he can say, "Go ask your mom," and then go ask your other mom, and eventually go ask your other mom. Do you not begin to see the great benefit of having almost any number of co-parenting plus? Yes, we love this development because it chops away at the institutionalized relationshipism of modern society. It deconstructs the monogamy privilege and declares death to nucleonormativity. It literally brings egalite, fraternite, and liberté to the decolonization of love. Now, parenting, just like sexual orientation and gender identity, can literally be whatever we want it to be. And if the Canadians can recognize polyparenty, maybe one day they can also bring freedom and inclusion to that other flailing institution of marriage by fully and legally embracing plural love. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
I don't even know where to begin. The plus, ask this parent, ask the other one. I love that.
Ask your other mother.
Other. Brought to you by ECUA, Bulk Waste Services now call for pickup. Call by 2 p.m. the day before your service day. You can learn more at ecua.fl.gov. Still rolling accident-free right now. Not seeing any delays on I-10, I-110. They're looking good. Even Avalon and 90 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives. I can't do it.
David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, Vice President Vance says Mike Waltz is not being fired from his role as national security advisor.
I think the media wants to frame this as a firing. Donald Trump has fired a lot of people. He doesn't give them Senate-confirmed appointments afterwards. What he thinks is that Mike Waltz is going to better serve the administration, most importantly, the American people in that role, and I happen to agree with him.
Vance spoke on Fox News. He said the decision for Waltz to leave his position is a promotion, as he's been nominated to become U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. This, of course, after the controversy over the Signal group chat. Marco Rubio now pulling double duty. He'll be the national security advisor interim while continuing to lead the State Department.
Even if it looks like a firing and walks like a firing and quacks like a firing, it's really a promotion.
Really?
How dare you?
We're promoting you. You're going to lead the
Oh, since we're kind of in this vicinity, did you see the Politico story that President Trump wants to rename Veterans Day as Victory Day for World War One?
I did.
And there's another one, too. I forget what the other one was. He wanted to... he wants to change VE Day to right. Victory in World War II Day, which was not accomplished until we had VJ Day. Dude. Dude. Stop it.
I'm Chris Foster.
You're the first graduating class of the Golden Age of America. We're in the Golden Age. You watch. This is the Golden Age.
President Trump congratulating the University of Alabama class of 2025 in a pre-commencement address in Tuscaloosa.
At Alabama, you fight, 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 and you win, win, win. That's what you know how to do.
Formal graduation ceremonies there start today. The president's at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida now. There's a Republican National Committee gala there tonight. The April jobs report comes out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern.
Economists expect that 130,000 jobs were added during the month, less than March's 228,000 gain. The unemployment rate is forecast to hold steady and remain at 4.2% for a second month.
That's Fox's Hillary Barsky. Stock futures are higher this morning ahead of that announcement. There is some optimism about possible trade talks with China. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3, 66 degrees right now, partly cloudy skies. It is a beautiful morning here in Pensacola. Of course, we'll check in with Brooke Richardson and get our Channel 3 forecast here in just a few minutes. Local UFC fighter Cedrique Dumas is facing serious charges here in Escambia County. The 29-year-old fighter was arrested this week on home invasion with a firearm, battery, and drug charges. So far, not a lot of details on his arrest have been released, but all this just coming 3 weeks now after his last fight where he was knocked out at UFC 314 in Miami. Highway 29 might be getting a much-needed expansion. Expanding that highway to six lanes is listed as a Regional Rural Transportation Plan priority project in a recent plan released by the Transportation Plan Technical Advisory Committee.
From 7 o'clock until 8:30 in the morning, and then from 4 o'clock on to about 6 in the evening. It's the rush hour traffic, people commuting. Just yesterday, one of our customers pulled out and got into a wreck right here in front of our restaurant.
And local business owner Doug Gardner there, that he owns Jen's Grill on 29 and tells Channel 3 an expansion is the only real solution with all of the growth in that area, and that'll be discussed at a meeting later this month. The man convicted of brutally killing a mother and her three kids in Crestview in 1998 has now died. The Florida Department of Corrections executing Jeffrey Hutchinson last night with a lethal injection. Lawyers had attempted to get a stay on that execution, arguing that he shouldn't be executed because of brain damage he suffered during the Gulf War. Governor DeSantis celebrating one of the largest immigration operations in Florida history. Yesterday, he announced 1,100 criminal illegal aliens had been arrested in a five-day immigration operation last week. He said it's the largest number of arrests in a single state in 1 week in ICE's history. ICE, the Department of Homeland Security, and Border Patrol were all involved in Operation Tidal Wave
DeSantis says people arrested included violent offenders, gang members, sex offenders, fugitives, and others who posed significant threats to public safety. Well, the controversial state law just a little bit closer to being repealed now, thanks to efforts by a Florida lawmaker. Senator Clay Yarbrough sponsored the bill to repeal the free kill law that passed the Senate yesterday. It limited which family members could sue for medical malpractice. Yarbrough called the bill unjust. The House has already voted to repeal it. Governor DeSantis would need to sign it before the repeal takes effect. Well, President Trump questioning whether undocumented immigrants deserve due process. He was delivering the commencement speech at the University of Alabama yesterday. Trump criticized judges who blocked his administration's efforts to deport illegal immigrants. It went on then to congratulate the university women's track and field team for its two conference title wins this year. Trump also took the opportunity to highlight his administration's efforts to ban transgender women from women's sports. It is 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives. Good morning, John Pickens.
Yeah. Well, good morning, David. We're seeing no accidents right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are flowing very smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much. Now our Channel 3 forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We will have a small chance of rain for this afternoon. Showers and thunderstorms possible. 30% chance of rain. High near 81. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 68. Rainy day on Saturday with an 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms. High near 80 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 65. Rain chances dropping out of that Sunday with a high near 78 and a low near 62. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you, Brooke. 66 in Pensacola, 72 in Gulf Breeze, 65 in Milton. Our next news at 7 o'clock and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
ZipRecruiter is the place. ZipRecruiter is the place for talented teachers, savvy software developers, and master mixologists. ZipRecruiter is the place where you meet all these people and more. That's because ZipRecruiter is the place for job seekers who are looking for new opportunities. In fact, ZipRecruiter helps 10 million people with their job search every day, so you can find the right candidates right away. It's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the place for skilled skydiving instructors, accomplished airbrush artists, and proficient pediatricians. But if you're not using ZipRecruiter to hire, you're missing out. ZipRecruiter is the place that's so confident it can make your hiring easier that it lets you try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. So if you want the right candidates for all your roles, ZipRecruiter is the place to go. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free. Never miss out on great candidates with ZipRecruiter.
Pensacola Little Theater is proud to present Trail to Oregon, May 2nd to 11th, a lively and humorous musical that follows the misadventures of a quirky pioneer family as they journey westward along the Oregon Trail in the 19th century. Led by the bumbling but well-meaning father, the family encounters a series of obstacles and colorful characters along the way, including bandits, buffalo stampedes, and the dreaded dysentery. Secure your tickets for this show online at PensacolaLittleTheater.com or at the PLT box office. This show contains mature themes and language.
Join Stefan Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. Have a boating question for Stefan? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them today at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3, and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
Kick a little something for them cars that be bumping.
Yeah, all right, but we need a beat that they can front to. Oh, that'll work. Be funky. You know what I'm saying?
Cars ride by with the booming system. Cars ride by. Cars ride by with the booming system.
Funky.
Well, the Florida Representative Escamani.
Representative Escamani, you are recognized in debate.
Mr. Speaker, please just vote no on this bill. That is my debate.
Wow. Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nobody wants to follow that. I'm sorry.
Representative Andrade, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Members, please disregard Representative Escamani's eloquent debate and vote up on this good bill.
The question now recurs in final passage of SB 118. The clerk will unlock the machine and the members will proceed to vote. Have all members voted?
89 yeas, 20 nays, Mr. Speaker.
Show the bill passes. Read the next bill.
Okay, I like the bill, but also I like the banter. And it's nice to hear representatives having a little bit of fun with each other, especially when they're both very smart people on completely opposite sides of almost everything. Anna Escamani on the liberal side, Alex Andrade on the conservative side, who joins us right now by phone. Representative Andrade, welcome back. I never call you that. Feels so formal. Welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Good morning, Andrew. How's it going?
Great. It's great. And, you know, can I just take a second and point this out? There are smart conservatives and there are not so smart conservatives. And there are smart liberals and there are not so smart liberals. And Anna Escamani is a smart liberal. I assume that you guys get along even though, or at least you can have, you know, positive interactions, even though you and she probably disagree about almost everything. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't treat you like a subhuman just because you disagree with her. And that's normally like, as long as a Democrat doesn't treat me like I'm less than a human being for having conservative beliefs, you can get along with them. I think she'll most likely be the next mayor of Orlando.
Hmm.
So that's her political trajectory at the moment. You can't take anything away from her performance in the Florida legislature for sure.
Do you see long term down the road, you know, like a statewide candidate for the Democrats as, you know, governor, AG, you know, ag commissioner or something like that?
If she wins election to become the next mayor of Orlando, then yeah, sure. I mean, that's always a possibility. She's the mayor, obviously, of a large, very large metro area.
Yeah.
I know the name of Orlando's current mayor. You know, that's, you know,
it's a position of prominence.
Not normal.
Okay.
She could, yeah.
Just speaking just for a second about not what you guys have done this week, but about interesting developments. And it's not in your chamber, it's in the Senate, but Jason Pizzo, who's another Democrat that I like a lot, who's very smart, sharp, capable, you know, formidable opponent, and you should always want your opponents to be formidable, has now left the Democrat Party, resigned his position as minority leader. That's been taken up by, Lori Berman. And he is now in a no-party affiliate, says that, the Democratic Party has lost its way, needs a future, and they don't want him to be it. How significant is this? Because he's now the third legislator this year, two in the House, one in the Senate, that have left the party.
Oh, I think it's incredibly significant. I mean, he was largely discussed and debated as being a statewide candidate for the Democrats going into next year's election. I think he's almost certainly still going to be a statewide candidate next year. He just won't be a statewide candidate for Democrats.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I certainly could see him running for any of the statewide offices, certainly for AG, I could see that, let alone possibly for governor. So that, which is, you know, going to be a very, very interesting race. Getting back to stuff you guys are doing, the big news is the budget has not happened. So how is this going to work? As I understand it, you guys are going to be off next week. You're not signy dying though, right?
I think we might be. That was the whole thing yesterday. So we've had circumstances where we've had to extend for a couple days, and our bill coverage, like how long it takes us to like pass and deliberate on bills, has been somewhat extended and travel along with our budget, you know, conference and negotiations, because they're essentially being taken up completely separate, and we are definitively done with bills today. No one knows if we're going to do like a hanky drop today, like a signy die handkerchief drop, the tradition that we have, and call it a day, and then kind of sort of like have a special session just on the budget in a couple weeks. So I'm learning along with everybody else today if that's what we're planning on doing or not.
Okay. So, but the requirement is just that a budget gets passed in the year. It doesn't have to be passed in regular session, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you
again? Like, that's the whole. I'm not the biggest pomp and circumstance guy, so I've never looked into it.
What color socks are you wearing to session today? Are you wearing pink socks, shiny dye socks, or are you wearing something else?
Well, I wear boots, so.
So it doesn't matter.
So no one will ever see those socks, no matter what.
We'll just leave all that where it is. I want to ask you a question about the bill that I just played the clips from the debate around, which is the Trump Library bill to protect the, we figure, likely creation of the Trump Library in South Florida from being restricted at all by any local zoning board. I get the idea here, because what you want to do is prevent the liberals from thwarting something that should definitely be in that locale. On the other hand, isn't there something sort of unconservative about passing a bill that tells the local zoning boards that they have no say whatsoever? I mean, what if Trump decides to erect a giant gold tower and, you know, like the kind of gaudy thing that Trump could very well do? Is there no concern that he might do it in a way that would really be inappropriate?
No, it would still be Trump's presidential library, and we should absolutely have Trump's presidential library here in the state of Florida. I don't see it being that big of a deal in the development of one parcel or one project, simply because, like, the land use and the zoning regulations at the local government level are really designed for, you know, making sure that patterns start existing, right? So there's zones of cohesion. We can make an exception to those zones of cohesion and those patterns for Trump's presidential library. I think the more gaudy and outlandish, the bigger the landmark, the bigger the draw, and the more prominent it becomes. So I'm not overly concerned on this one preemption, but I get where you're coming from.
Okay. We're talking to Alex Andrade. He's our state representative for District 2. Hang on for just a second, Alex. We've got John Pickens with Traffic on the Fives.
No accidents to report to you right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your Traffic on the Fives.
Thanks so much, John. The agriculture bill that we kind of joked around in Transgressors, I actually played your clip of the nut juice. I thought that was hilarious. That's the only thing anybody's been talking to me about for the last day, by the way, is the nut juice comment. We're all a bunch of 12-year-olds. I did have this is maybe an odd question. In the agriculture bill, the part about chicken product or poultry products and meat products, it doesn't specify chicken and beef. It seems to me like it's not prohibitive enough if you're trying to accomplish the purpose. Somebody could still call it chicken substitute or beef substitute because the words poultry and meat are what are banned. Am I missing something here?
I don't think you are. I haven't looked that closely at that bill itself. But no, I don't think you are. I mean, it's not designed to completely eliminate the possibility of someone trying to make a connection. It's designed to just try and make sure that no one can mistake what is definitely not chicken as chicken.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't believe it's not butter is probably too close to calling it butter. Like, you know what I mean? It's tough for me to pinpoint it, and I understand where you're coming from on, like, you have issues with it. A lot of us had issues with it, but it was just never enough to, like,
vote down the bill
to that level. So
okay,
yeah. So I didn't drill down too hard on that bill.
Yeah, I can't believe it's not butter. It's really a classic example of that's a great example of fabulous branding that would maybe not quite be prohibited by this, but certainly be discouraged by the tone of it or whatever. I do have, you know, free market kind of, you know, free speech kind of questions about it, but I don't want customers to be misled, and, you know, I don't want somebody to inadvertently consume some, you know, almond milk and mistakenly thinking that it's regular milk. The fluoride part of this, though, big deal.
Yeah.
And the governor's, the Senate passed it. It's a Senate bill you guys are working on. The governor's going to sign it, I assume. That's the expectation. We're really banning fluoride in the state of Florida in the drinking water. Is that right?
Yeah, that's my understanding. And it from that context, it makes sense to me. I mean, you know, there's no consent that's given when you turn on your tap water.
Right.
And the idea of the government essentially injecting, you know, vitamins or medicine into the drinking water is it's an odd idea. I don't think fluoride is necessarily killing anybody. I don't think it was necessarily bad. I do think it had an added benefit for people in their oral health. But at the same time, I get it. So, again, it's just another kind of like we've taken something to its philosophical extent. And hopefully we don't have to have another debate on it next year.
Yeah, I would think so, too. Hey, one of the things, you know, I asked you last week. About the funding, you know, and your expectation that the governor is going to, you know, basically veto all of your funding projects because of his frustration with you over all of the Hope Florida Foundation stuff. And you're hoping that we would have any, you know, like a follow-up session that we'd have veto overrides for that kind of stuff. Any progress on that front? Any signals of, you know, what Speaker Perez is willing to do or what, you know, might be happening if those things come to pass? Because I got to assume, you know, you're not the only one. Michelle Salzman's not the only one. There might be others as well that would be willing. But, I mean, any sense of progress yet on this?
Well, we're not going to schedule, obviously, a veto override special session before we even have a budget.
Sure. That makes sense.
You know, because, I mean, there's a possibility that because if we don't have an agreement, we have to have, like, a judicially created or set budget for the year, kind of akin to a continuing resolution at the federal level. If that's the case, then no projects will exist for anybody at all anyway. So no, I mean, it's looking as if the Senate is not as concerned about budget vetoes, which is interesting. You know, but, you know, like, I think I heard you mention with the mayor on Wednesday about projects like the Baptist money's taken care of. Like that was on my list of things not to veto when the governor was my fan last session. So like the Baptist money's not going anywhere and the city doesn't have any money in our current budgets anyway. There's no major project in this budget this year for the local region that would be as harmed. There's a lot of good things, like a lot of good things in here that I'm trying to get done for a lot of good organizations and groups and companies and people. But there's nothing as like significant as like that.
Doesn't the Baptist money have to get like extended or reauthorized because it's the next year? Isn't there some process there?
That's a completely legislative action.
Oh, okay. So the governor can't veto that.
So long as we don't pull it back and mess with it because it hasn't been spent yet.
Okay.
It's not in this budget to be vetoed.
I gotcha. Okay. Oh, that's interesting. See, I had misunderstood that, so I'm glad you clarified that. Hey, last thing, I did want to give you a little bit of time. It's a complicated issue. I know it doesn't specifically address, you know, here in Escambia or Santa Rosa counties, but it is close by. It's the Walton Beach Bill. You have explained this many, many times. Where does this land now that the bill has been passed by the House? What is the actual outcome of this deal with customary use?
Okay, so there was a bill that was passed a few years ago, I think the year or two before I got there, in the Florida House. And the bill essentially said if a county wanted to declare customary use, the county had to go to court and ask a judge's permission to declare customary use.
Or public access, if you want to think of it that way. Go ahead.
Yeah, public access. So we passed a repealer bill yesterday, myself and Senator Jay Trumbull. We passed a repealer bill to do away with that statute. And really, all that means now is a county can declare customary use or public access, and it would be on the property owner that is probably losing some property rights to then be the one to go to court and seek a judge's permission to deny the county that ability to declare customary use. So from my perspective, it just changes who files the lawsuit. But I understood why some folks back in Walton County, you know, may have wanted it. So I was happy to help Senator Trumbull out and do it.
All right. Yeah. And again, that has been a, I know it's a big story for them and we're kind of close to them and sometimes they might listen to us or whatever. And I just wanted to give you a chance to explain that to folks who might otherwise not have gotten the information directly from you about a bill that you were sponsoring. Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2. Alex, again, thank you for the time as always during session. And we look forward to more updates about what's happening with regards to a special session or budget discussions. Or let's fingers crossed, hope it doesn't come to this veto overrides. But as always, I really appreciate the time and the occasional quip that makes me laugh.
Thanks, Richard.
6:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
It's the 25th annual Crawfish Festival at Bamboo Willie's on the Pensacola Beach Boardwalk May 2nd through the 4th. Come and enjoy live music from Swampland Revival, Sadie McClendon, Count the Years, Jared McConnell, and many more. Plus, be entertained by the fireworks Saturday night and lots of crawfish all weekend long. And of course, you'll want to visit the local artists along the boardwalk and enjoy the kids' crawfish race as well. It's a festival of fun for the entire family. Visit PensacolaBeachCrawfishFestival.com for more details.
The Big Bamboo!
Hey, all the way.
Hey, all the way.
The Pensacola Navy Days 4K is Saturday, May 10th. This fun run starts at Plaza de Luna and runs up Palafox, along Bayfront to Veterans Park, and back to Plaza de Luna. Registrants receive a commemorative Pensacola Navy Days challenge coin and race t-shirt. You can run or walk, and when you return to Plaza de Luna, you can celebrate with a beverage and stick around for the Family Fun Fest. Register now at PensacolaNavyDays.com. That's PensacolaNavyDays.com.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Bring out the gimp.
Royale with cheese, that's what they call it. It's 6:55 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. You know, I had this thought yesterday. I was thinking about how we play these movie quotes that some people do not know and other people do know. I make these movie references and culture references that some people know and other people do not know. And I realized that basically if I make a movie reference and people don't know it, I think they're weird and uninformed. And if somebody else makes a movie reference that I don't know, I think they're weird and they've watched too much TV.
You do a lot of thinking, man.
Durr.
I mean,
I'm not defending that attitude. I'm just saying that's, you know.
But normally, if I give you a weird look, like, where did that come from?
That's, yeah. Well, yeah. I just know you haven't watched enough TV is the issue, which we should all aspire to watch more TV, right? That's something people say to themselves all the time.
The doctor should have told me that.
My problem in life is I just haven't watched enough TV.
Yes.
And then all my dreams will come true. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
Aww,
John.
How cute. No accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110, Highway 90, 98, and Highway 29 are actually flowing very smoothly this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
A memorial to those killed in the Uvalde school shooting has reportedly been vandalized. Uvalde police chief calling that a senseless and cruel act and says it's inflicted more pain on the small town in Texas west of San Antonio. Police there say they're working to identify whoever did that. Dozens of people have been arrested in Philadelphia for obstructing traffic in a May Day protest. Protests were held in cities all across the U.S. Thursday for International Workers' Day in Philadelphia. Thousands of people attended a protest. 70 people were arrested for blocking a highway. And here earlier we were talking about President Trump and Veterans Day. Well, a little more information on that. President Trump says he wants to rename Veterans Day to Victory Day for World War I. He made that announcement on Truth Social. Veterans Day, of course, observed November 11th. He also said he wants to rename VE Day, which is observed on May 8th, to Victory Day for World War II. He says he's making these changes because we won both wars, and we are going to start celebrating our victories again. I don't know how people are going to feel about Veterans Day changing names.
Yeah. Hey, John. John. Hey, David. What do you plan on doing for Victory Day for World War One next week?
Well.
Oh, you mean Veterans Day?
And it's grown. It's grown so far beyond what the initial thing was. But I mean, you've got people from modern wars and Afghanistan and Iraq.
And it's become much more comprehensive than just Armistice Day, right? And same thing for VE Day. I mean, you at least have a chance for people knowing what VE Day was. It's the day we celebrate the end of the war in Europe for World War II. I don't think anybody doesn't know what that is. And if they don't, they didn't know what VE was in the first place. But to say victory in World War II, it wasn't until a second day, VJ Day, that was very important having to do with the bomb and the emperor. So just stop it.
Some things are just better left alone.
Are we going to change it in the textbooks, too? Are we going to change the sailfish sign to say, you know?
Oh, the textbook people are going to love this.
You know what I really wonder? You know, I genuinely wonder this. I wonder what the military veterans who are super pro-Trumpers, like the super pro-MAGA people, who Trump can do no wrong. Honestly, what's your view of this? Like, do you, that makes sense. Or are you like, bro, no. And I don't know, because I don't see the world that way, through that lens. So I'm really curious. If you want to text me, 437-1620. I'm genuinely curious what military veterans, especially older military veterans who love President Trump all the time, what you think about these proposals to rename these very important dates. Listen.